say Mallorca, and you say Majorca. I say
Majorca,
and you say
Mallorca.
Mallorca, Majorca, Mallorca, Majorca. Let's call the whole thing off.
Cheers.
Morning. We're out.
It's actually not the morning, it's the afternoon. It's Sunday afternoon.
Well, I only had one meal so far, so it still counts as the morning.
That's true. We're in La Consigna.
Our behinds are located in the exclusive Port Andrews, one of its oldest establishments, coffee shop.
It's a very cool spot, and very happy memories for me in this cafe, actually.
Yes, we should start off with two things.
What?
An introduction. I'm Oliver.
Oh, hello, I'm Vicky. How are you?
And an apology. Sorry, I haven't done this for a while.
Sorry. I actually had an email from someone asking if we were okay.
We are, more or less.
We are okay. Thank you very much for asking, Martin. But the problem we've had is that May, traditionally, for me at least, is always a very busy place and a busy time for our clients. And this year, more than ever, it's been absolutely brutal. And I know that last time we said that on our We're Really Sorry episode, but we underestimated how intense things were going to get. And in the middle of it all, actually, we also got vaccinated, didn't we?
We got our first dose of... What was it?
Pfizer.
We Pfizered up. It's funny. Everybody's kind of doing that whole... Which one did you get?
I know.
Pfizer. Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Oh, quality vaccine. What have we become in a year?
It's
actually
true.
6 months, isn't it? With the
vaccine snobs.
Well, I'm glad to hear that for whatever reason. I haven't read enough news to know why mine's a good one and what the bad ones are and why they're bad and why they're good.
I think there's just never been any doubt chucked over Pfizer, that's why. And also the reason why a lot of people of our age are getting the Pfizer vaccine is because there's a lot of it in the country.
Yeah.
There's been millions of the Pfizer vaccines in the country.
And
the second
dose is 3 weeks for us, isn't it? So 3 weeks from the vote.
Yeah, they were very efficient. On the second that we were being needled, we were also being given our next appointment.
One thing took 5 minutes.
Brilliant.
A bit more. So I was still trying to dig my passport out and already been vaccinated until to get lumps. More or less. So yeah, I'm booked in with a second appointment. So I think the Pfizer, the second dose is closer in time than some of the others. Some of the others are like 12 weeks, aren't they? Anyway,
yeah.
So just for a point of record, actually, we're just in our 50s. So
yeah.
And that's where Mallorca anyway has got to with its vaccination program. 50-year-olds.
Younger than that now. 1976, I saw your birth year could be. So you're in the mid 40s now.
Young'uns.
Mere striplings.
Anyway, look, we'll keep this short today. I've got an intro for you because we've got an interview coming up with Becky from Mallorca Solutions about all things paperwork, and she's fascinating and invaluable. So that's coming up in a bit, and then we should start again with another apology saying we did record this a little while ago.
Yeah,
but
sorry,
it's all
Becky.
Still, if not actually more relevant now.
It's getting more and more urgent for most people.
It's about your TIEs and your driving licenses and a whole bunch of other stuff. So that's coming up soon. But we've just a few little bits to go. Now, Mallorca is getting busier. Port Andrews is lots of people wandering about who are clearly tourists. Rental cars on the road. A lot of German voices here. Port Andrews is very, very popular with German travellers, and actually in the last few years has also been very popular. Not with sort of Brits as well. It's mostly a place where it's a real luxury spot, where people own holiday homes and big ones, don't they?
Yeah, and massively expensive cars.
Yeah, there's no real hotels here, but so it is homeowners. But actually, we haven't walking through this morning hardly heard a British voice actually this morning. So
no.
Because the British can travel, but not quite so easily. So the position as it stands from the UK, and we did talk about this last time, Britain is classifying countries into red, green and amber. Red is please don't go at all, but if you do go you have to come back and quarantine in a government hotel at your own expense, which is expensive. Amber.
Do you want another coffee?
I'll have another coffee.
Yeah.
Amber, which is you can go kind of, we'd rather you didn't, but when you come back you have to quarantine in your own house. So, amber countries, of which Spain is an amber country, you have to come back quarantine in your own house for 10 days unless you take a a negative test, in which case you can leave your house after 5 days. And green, where you can come and go as you please. Now, there were a few places in green, Falkland Islands and Gibraltar and a few other places.
It just makes me snigger so badly. It's like,
I know.
It's a major holiday. I mean, obviously, there's lots of people living in the Falkland Islands who are family in the Falklands who are happy that they can go there, but it's such a random.
Do you reckon Michael O'Leary's going, can we lay on some flights there? We've got nowhere else to go. Anyway.
Such a long way away.
So, and also Portugal is one of them. So, yeah. Portugal being more or less the only major European holiday destination that was in green. So, lots of people jumped on the flights to the Algarve. And but the government late last week actually changed the rules again, moving Portugal back into amber, which caught a lot of people on the hop. They basically got about 108 hours, I think, between the announcement and
it coming in.
Comes in on Tuesday to get themselves home before they would have to quarantine. They interviewed quite a few people on the telly, and they had a real problem doing this because they have to get a negative test for it and get on a flight, and the Portuguese system was taking 3 or 4 days to get a negative
test. And there was a fiesta in the middle of it as well, wasn't there?
That was a public holiday in Portugal. So lots of people are about to get stuck there. Now, obviously, that's bad news for Portugal and for the travellers that are stuck, but a lot of travel journalists are reporting this is actually substantially bad news for everybody because it really sends a message that even if we tell you can go somewhere, we might change our minds in 3 days flat. So any last kind of green shoots of optimism amongst the British travel industry have been well and truly stamped on with the pair of size 12s wielded by Boris Johnson. So that's kind of put the muckers on the Brits. From the other point of view, the Spanish authorities are announcing that as of tomorrow, Monday, you can come from anywhere you like in the world as long as you've had two vaccines. There are other restrictions as well. Basically, they're opening up to anybody who's had two vaccines wherever you're coming from in the world. So we shall see what happens. Obviously, it's kind of good news, bad news for people here on the island. The German resorts and the Dutch resorts and the French resorts are doing all right.
They're busy.
The British-dominated resorts are...
Magaluf, for example, Alcudia, empty.
And the Daily Bulletin was reporting that the decision by the Brits effectively has made the decision for 100 hotels to stay closed, at least for the time being. I was talking to someone the other day who was talking about that, you know, they were allowed 50% capacity in their hotel. And he said, well, that's all very well, but I need, in order to open my hotel, I need 90% of the staff to operate on 50% of the rooms. There's no profit in that.
No.
So that's the decision that a lot of people are making. So, yeah, it's we're slowly getting there. It is slowly getting busier, but there's this dreaded extra wave. I can't remember how many we're up to that people are wearing now.
What?
Well,
another one?
Portugal's case has been going up, which is why Britain made its reversal on its decision. The movement on what's being called the Nepalese variant and the Indian variant, well, they're now being called Delta variant. There's a lot. I'm trying to catch up with this a lot.
But they're not calling them the country names any longer. They're calling them the Delta variants. They're giving them all Greek names. So you've got Alpha, Beta, Gamma, Delta.
That's a posh education for you there. You've done three more than I could have done. Grammar school girl.
I had to work hard at that grammar school. All right, get up here.
Anyway, what else?
Yeah. Oh, sorry, what else? Yeah, so,
but this week,
meanwhile, back on the rock, we have had the Palmer Boat and Super Yacht Show this week. It's actually the last day today, and it's been a big success as far as I can tell. It's been, I was attending a captain's dinner, darling. Yes, that's what I was doing on Thursday night. I was photographing a dinner for a client.
Tell me it was fish fingers.
No, they didn't have fish. Although they did, they had tuna tartare, but they didn't have any fish fingers.
Fish fingers and rum.
It was a really nice event, and it was in the outside of the Espaillat Museum in the terrace there.
Oh, it's very nice there, isn't it?
It is very nice, but it was outside catering by Delicioso because the bar at Espaillat is shut, and I think permanently shut, actually, another victim of the coronavirus. And the event was really lovely. It was organised by Estella Super Yacht Agency and various other companies were sponsored as well. And congratulations to them. It's the first event I've been to in more than a year.
Yeah, actually, we should say if you're ever in Palma on your holidays, or if you live here and you haven't been there, check out Espaillat. It's they've managed to wedge an art gallery literally literally inside the city wall. Yeah. It's like it's the old medieval city walls. This is the western edge near Santa Catalina area. And they literally have it's inside the wall. I don't know how else to describe it.
It's true, actually. You're right. It's inside the wall.
It's not on one side of the wall or the other side of the wall. They followed out the wall and put it inside.
It's a really interesting museum and gallery. And
a great bit of architecture, actually.
Fun to go to.
I'd say sometimes the architecture is better than the art in there. But it's definitely worth a trip.
I agree, actually. So, some of it just leave you a little bit like... But it's the fact it's on a small a small town on a small city on an island. It's not doing too badly.
No, go and have a look.
Anyway, and so the boat show's been on this week. Lots of people are very busy hustling hard to get their businesses back on track. And I got to say, the super yacht industry in particular has had pretty good winter and spring season. So I did an article. Mm-hmm. For the New Yorker Daily Bulletin this week, and I interviewed Pinmar and Universal Nautic, which are two companies that work in the refitting business, which is a really huge industry, actually.
Massive, multi.
And there's 400 companies just around Palma that are all focused on the refit and superyacht industries, and it's a niche, but it's a very powerful niche because they bring so much money and so much commerce to the island. And yeah, they both Ian from Pinmar and Leon from Universal Nautic both reported really good turnover and really good results for 2021 so far, and they both seem very optimistic, so it's really great to hear.
I mean, just one thing that does seem to be obvious about Mallorca is if you're providing luxury goods, whether it's expensive meals or luxury houses or luxury boats, you're doing all right. Actually, it seems to be the way that Mallorca is heading is a luxury product, which is the bit to be in, really.
That's the other thing that we've been working I particularly have been so busy within the last month is the real estate market, because I've got a client who has two houses. We've sold both of them in the last month. And I mean they're both like big villas, not even in the most fancy part of the island, and they're both sold, they're done,
as to foreign owners for their holiday homes.
One is Swiss, one is German.
It's where it's at, isn't it? We should definitely do a super yacht themed
we have to
episode.
We absolutely must do. Maybe we can catch up with some of the guys next week or the week after, once the dust has settled from the boat show.
And well, actually, what happens, the reason the boat shows at this time of year is because basically now all the boats go in the water and disappear off to the I was going to say the Monaco Grand Prix, but that was 2 weeks ago.
It's normally April.
So it is show. It's been a bit delayed. Normally they go off to the Cannes Film Festival and they go off to their seasons and they have the guests and the charters and stuff. So it's the middle part of the year, there's nobody doing anything in Palma for the boats, because they're all out, and then they come back again in October and they need painting and scraping and squillions of pounds spent on them again.
But you know why they do it every the refit cycle is about every 4 to 6 years, and it's because the boats get relicensed every 5 years,
right?
And so they have to be inspected, and they take that apparently takes quite a long time to get everything looked at, and so they take the opportunity to refit and fix up everything that is,
and your seat cushions are bound to have gone out of fashion by that,
slightly scratched, or the hull needs repainting or anti-fouling or whatever. So it's I actually learned quite a lot of my interviews that I did.
I know you have. Yeah, it's a fascinating business. Anyway, so what else? We're moving on to Becky.
Let's talk about Becky, because this is the reason why we are. How can I explain Becky? I've known Becky for a long time now, actually, and she is absolutely the person that I trust 100% with any kind of paperwork that needs to be achieved in Mallorca, because I have no patience, no understanding. My technical Spanish is not good enough, and also I just get kind of blind looking at forms. I just don't want to do them, and so I give Becky the mission, whatever it is. Last time it was you'd lost your. What did you lost your drive? No, you'd lost your residencia, and we had to get you a new one. And I just said, Becky, we need this, we need that. and she just goes off and organises it for us, and then we pay her a fee and it's all done.
Yeah,
she's just wonderful. She knows everything about all the paperwork and all the ins and outs and all of the my husband's from Ireland but I'm from England, and what can I do about this?
Father's Spanish, but all that kind of stuff.
Many complicated scenarios.
Basically, they just sort the paperwork out, because even if you're really good at it, it's still a couple of hours in the town hall or the department in Parma. And if you're not very good at it, you'll waste your time because you've got the wrong bit of paper and stuff.
Especially if you're self. I know that actually, I don't know if this is for sure a fact, but I thought that employed people on a contract actually got like official paperwork days in their days off a year. Is that true?
Oh, I don't know.
It sounds like something that I wouldn't be surprised if you got like a couple of days off a year just to go to the council.
I think you're right, actually, yeah, because it is a bit of a bureaucratic nightmare. But Becky's got, she's got a gang of what would you say about 10 employees.
Grown a lot.
Often people who were born here with sort of foreign parents, if you like, so her employees are fluent in
English,
a couple of different languages, and they just they'll hold your hand or take you to the town hall and tell you to sign this.
So patient and lovely.
It's time well spent. And since Brexit, well, I don't want to steal her thunder too much. She'll tell you about it. But since Brexit, obviously, a lot of British people are suddenly the necessity to get the right paperwork has got a bit urgent.
And there is actually some of the things that you think you've run out of time to do, actually you haven't. So listen to this interview with Becky, because she's got so much knowledge and I can't recommend her highly enough. And hopefully you'll find answers to questions that you might have in the next 40-ish minutes of me just sitting open-mouthed as Becky tells me everything I needed to know.
Great. That's another
paperwork. Oh, no, but I can't have two in a day. Anyway, enjoy this. Cheers, chick.
Cheers.
Oh, is it hot, though?
It is. Oh, we can do it.
Blow.
Nothing like a good cup of tea.
It's very good to know that there's a decent cup of tea at Mural Solutions.
There you go. I always give you a nice cup of tea or a nice cup of coffee.
You do. You're good at that. It's important. Hot beverages are my life.
I love them.
Well, welcome, Becky, back to the Majorca Mural podcast. And also, we're going to be putting this out on YouTube. Introduce yourself to the listener in case they haven't heard of you before, please.
So I'm Becky from Majorca Solutions. We set up in 2008 initially, all that time back when we first met.
Wow.
2008, our office was based on the outskirts of Magaluf near the sports centre, if you remember.
I do remember.
Yep, we were there till about 2016. So that we were there for 8 years, and then we moved over to Palma Nova, yes, to the offices next to the Correos, the post office. And then this new year we said, okay, we're going in with a bang and we're moving offices. Now we're in Son Bovedillas. As you've seen the office.
Yeah, it's really nice.
All the departments are here, so we've got the properties team as well as the admin and insurance team here, which is good, because then we did have the two offices in Palma Nova. One was number two and then number five was the properties.
Yes.
So then we're all together, which is better as a team, really. And for those who don't know, we help people with relocating to Majorca and any official paperwork, as well as insurance and property needs. So we have the whole package, really. You come to live here, you need a property, we help you search the right property, we help you with all the official paperwork and insurances. We're insurance brokers and work with 34 companies.
Wow, 34?
So, yeah, before I was an exclusive agent for Liberty and DKV, and I decided to expand a little bit more to have a bit more choice. So now as brokers, we can work with all the companies out there. So it keeps us busy.
There's no stopping you, is there, really?
No stopping me.
Because when you started in 2008... I think you were already filling a gap and meeting a need of people, and it seems like the demand is just increasing all the time. People really need support getting all this official paperwork done, don't they?
Totally. And initially we started with certain services, which were the most common ones: NIEs, residency, exchanging driver licence, registering at the town hall, getting kids into school. And gradually, as we went expanding and, you know, seeing what the demand was, we just went adding and adding on to the services that we offer.
Mm.
When we do change of plates, car transfers, duplicate paperwork, ITVs, getting a licence if you've got... what they call a dangerous dog.
Yeah.
You know, i.e. like a pit bull or a Rottweiler, though bless them, they're not dangerous, but you know, you need these licenses and the insurances that go with them to getting licenses to cut down trees, set up businesses. There's just so much that we do now.
Yeah.
It's just...
Coming from another country to move here, it's actually mind-boggling when you think about all the things that you need a bit of paper for that perhaps you didn't need where you lived, or perhaps actually you had it, but you were almost born with it, you know? Like, I always had my national insurance number. It just got sent to me automatically when I turned 16 in England. But applying for all this stuff here is a really time-consuming process and very confusing for a lot of people.
I think it's what you say. Because you've had it since you were young, like at 16, you get your national insurance number. You don't know how to apply for that. You don't know where to go. It's just given to you, the same as your ID, you know, your passport, then obviously renewing your passport and things like that you do. But here, not only is it that it's Spain, and we all know that in Spain, things work a little bit differently. Sometimes you go to a department and they tell you one thing, you go back again and they tell you something else.
Yes.
So you're sent from pillar to post, and then there's a language barrier, but also about the information that changes day to day. Before we had this meeting, I said, hang on a minute, let me just check where we're at on the driving licenses, because it changes from one day to another. It's just been growing and growing.
But you've got a smile on your face. You must enjoy this job, because I think it would drive most of us mad.
I know, and you know what? I love it, but when it comes to doing my own paperwork, I'm right at the bottom of the pile.
Really?
I am.
Have you got your TIE sorted out then?
You know what? Because I've got the Spanish nationality from my father, I've got the Spanish ID card, so I didn't have to change it. But if I had to apply for it, I would probably be at the bottom of the list before sorting mine.
It is a big question still for a lot of Brits living here, the TIE cards. The last time we spoke was last August.
I remember we were in my car, because my other office was so echoey.
Yeah.
We were like, where are we going? Let's just go in the car.
We sat in there with the aircon on.
We did well, though. And that was in the summer, because we had the aircon on.
Yeah.
Was that last year?
It was last August.
August?
Yeah, I think so. So tell me about how the last 6 months have been, because really, well, actually more than 6 months now, but really it must have been like a tidal wave of applications.
It's been a whirlwind. We've been really, really busy, extremely busy. You know, what happens is that, you know, everybody, when people were contacting us, Vicky, they were like, okay, can we have some information? We couldn't turn it around within 48 to 72 hours. We needed sometimes 5 days to get back to people, because we were having like 150 emails coming in daily.
Whoa.
And then obviously an email would be received, and if we hadn't got back to them by the following day, they were calling the office.
Yeah.
Because everybody was in panic mode.
Yeah.
They thought, oh, we've got to the 31st of December. What are we going to do?
Hurry!
Of course, we brought extra staff in. There's 14 of us in the office now. But to train someone on the services that we offer, we can't train them from 1 month or a couple of weeks.
Mm.
It takes anything between 3 to 6 months to make sure that our advisor are giving the right information. And there's so much to learn that it was very busy last year. I'm glad it's calmed down a little bit. We're still extremely busy, because we had another deadline for 31st of March this year for initial residency applications.
Yeah.
And that was for anybody who was living here in Mallorca last year in 2020, that they could prove that they're living here, then they had the right to apply for the initial residency application from Mallorca up until the 31st of March.
And that deadline is now passed.
Well, believe it or not. No.
Oh.
No. I was like, but nobody was actually confirming it was the 31st. It wasn't in writing anywhere, but they had told us via the UK that it was going to be about 31st of March. But then it didn't make sense, because the driving licenses was going on till the 30th of June. So why initial residency till the 31st of March? So I'm happy to say that we're able to do initial applications for people that could prove they were resident here last year in 2020. We're still allowed to submit them from Mallorca up until the 30th of June.
OMG.
I know.
Wow, that's good news for so many people.
And online, because I submit that initial application with immigration online, it's open and you can see that you're allowed to submit those applications.
So what kind of proof do people need to give in order to make that application?
That's a good question, because we get asked this all the time. So to prove that you were living here and meet the requirements, you need either a rental contract. If you own a property, that you purchased that property here last year, private medical insurance is really important. And what would be essential to that application is that you were registered at the town hall, the empadronamiento,
right,
last year. We have also been given other options. We don't have the final say, as you know. It's immigration that do. So anything that you can think of, from flight tickets coming in to a rental contract to bank statements that you can prove that you were living here and there's movements, supermarket, wining, dining, entertaining, whatever. Anything that you can do to support the fact that you, to prove that you were living here, we're taking in and we're submitting. Obviously, immigration have the last word, as I mentioned before, but the key ones, private medical insurance, or that you were working here, that's another important one. If you were working here, then that's
proof that you've paid your taxes, that you've paid your social security.
Yes, totally. As autonomo, if you were self-employed, that's also working in Spain. I mean, those are the key ones. You know, if you were living here and registered at the town hall with a rental contract or with the deeds of the property, working, whether self-employed or for someone in Spain on a Spanish contract, and then bank statements and private medical insurance, all of that is just extra to support the application.
And how long is that process actually taking from? Have you had anybody approved yet?
Yes, yeah, we've had quite a lot of them. The ones that we actually submitted up until December last year, December ones are actually coming through now.
Okay.
So it's as from January, any of the ones that we did in January onwards, we're still waiting for confirmation. So they've gone over the 3 months. Mm. Period that they normally have to get back to us, but I think it's just been purely because of a huge volume of inquiries that they're getting and applications that everything is just further delayed. How long does it take? There's three stages to the initial application. Very briefly, the initial application we submit online. They review all the forms, the supporting paperwork and the application that we've submitted. And by law, they've got 3 months to reply to us, confirming either do we need additional paperwork to be added to that application, or if it's a positive or a negative resolution. So has it been approved or has it been denied? They don't normally give you a denied confirmation. They just say, look, we're missing this. You've got 10 days to provide this, and then we'll review the case again. But normally after 3 months, they should give you a positive or negative result. And then based on that, we then make a second appointment, which is to do the fingerprints. And then there's a third appointment to collect your card. So all in all, minimum 6 months.
I held my breath throughout that whole thing.
I know, it's three stages, but before it was just the one.
Yes.
On the day, you get submit your application, you pay your local charges, you didn't need fingerprints.
No.
And you get your card there and then, where now we're non-EUs.
I don't like that phrase, third country business at all.
Non-European.
It makes me feel angry. But anyway, that's my political issue.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the benefit of having this permission, means that we can then, as a permanent resident, we can stay in Spain all the time. We don't have to do this 90 days out of 180 days thing. That ruling is also creating a lot of conversations and confusions. Can you give me some details about how that actually works?
Okay. So as a resident in Spain, you have no limitations. You can reside, work, no problem in Spain. You can travel within the EU countries, no problem. Bear in mind that when you travel based on your passport, not on the residency card. But because you do have residency in Spain, when you're traveling, it's good to actually show your Spanish TIE card, okay? Bear in mind that when travelling within the EU, it's based on your passport. Okay.
So in other EU countries, I would only have the right to stay in those countries for 90 days out of 180. Is that correct?
Correct. because your residence is here. Mm. Okay. However, they give you the flexibility, and a lot of them oversee that because you are a resident in a member state. Okay. But just to bear in mind that, yes, the reason why you're allowed to be here long term is because you hold Spanish residency. Mm. You wouldn't be able to do that in another EU country unless if you applied for residency there.
Gotcha.
Okay. So there's no restrictions within the 90 days. Okay, if you've got your TIE card or the green certificate, whether it was the A4 or the little green card, that makes you a resident, even though you haven't exchanged it for your TIE. So you have no restrictions with staying here. The 90 days applies to those who aren't resident.
Yeah.
Okay. So
for example, a holiday homeowner who lives in the UK is coming over, can now only stay up to 90 days before they have to leave the country.
Correct. So anyone who is a tourist and not a resident, we don't need visas. The UK doesn't need a visa to enter the EU, but we do get stamped in with a stamp on your passport, and it's from that date that your 6 months start. Okay, and that's why the phrase that we're hearing a lot is that you're allowed to be in Spain for 90 days within given 6 months.
Mm.
So from the date that you enter, 6 months down the line, that's the time frame. And within that time frame, you're allowed to be here 90 days.
So you can come and go.
But effectively, you're only allowed to be here 180 in 1 year. But 90, so do it in slots. You come in on the 1st of January. Okay, you've got till the 30th of June. That's your 6 months.
Mm.
In that time frame, you can only spend 90 days here. So if you did from the 1st of June to the 31st of March, I don't know if that's 90 days or maybe a day less. It's 3 months. Mm. Yeah. You would then have to leave on the 31st of March, and then you wouldn't be able to re-enter again until July because your 90 days are within those first 6 months.
So you can't, for example, show up on the 31st of March, do 90 days until the end of June, and then roll over another 90 days and stay until the end of September. You have to leave.
So, as in that case, you'd be able to do the 90 days 1st of Jan till the 30th or 29th of March, then you'd have to leave and then come back in July and stay another 90 days.
Yeah.
That you're allowed to do. But a lot of people think, oh, I'm up my 90 days, I'll leave, come back in, and I've got another 90 days. No.
Right.
Yeah, it's a bit confusing, isn't it?
Tougher.
I think what you need to think of is that in a 6 month period from the time that you enter, you're only allowed to be 90 days and then you need to leave.
And how are they policing this, regulating it?
So all airport and ports, the control points, they're actually asking for your passport. They're checking the stamps in your passport because you should be stamped into the country and stamped out of the country as non-EUs. And that's how they're regulating it.
And what are the penalties if you do go over that period?
Good question. We haven't had any cases yet. Sometimes there's fines. Other times they see it's just a few days and they won't say anything. I think it really depends on who you get at the airport. We've got a lot of non-EU clients that have used us for many services. A lot of them overstayed their welcome and they haven't had a problem. They've left and hadn't had an issue coming back. However, it depends on who you get, and you could be deported and they wouldn't allow you in for X amount of time.
Right.
But as far as fines go, I wouldn't know.
It's going to hit the headlines, isn't it, when it happens, if and when it happens.
If and when it happens. I think there's a lot of flexibility at the minute with the transition period at the minute. But it is true that that's what we're entitled to.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about now people who want, God knows why. Why would you want to do it, but want to move to Spain? I know why.
Of course. We all know why. It's fabulous.
It's a really great place to live.
Of course.
But what? How are these guys going to be able to get into the country to live here permanently? What are the things that they need to comply with?
Okay, so if we leave aside the case, like we were saying, that you can prove that you were living here last year, that you can still submit it from here, okay, the application for residency. Anyone who wasn't here last year needs to apply for initial residency as a UK citizen, has to apply for residency via the Spanish consulate in the UK. Okay, so in the UK, we've got London, Manchester, and there's also one in Edinburgh. Okay, so it's via the Spanish consulate that the initial application needs to take place. Once that's granted, you get a visa in your passport, and it's when you enter Spain with that visa that you've got to make an appointment to then do the fingerprint stage and then another appointment to collect your card. Okay, so what you're doing by applying for via the Spanish consulate is avoiding the step that we do here by immigration, that first step of supplying all documents. Those documents you would supply in the UK at the Spanish consulate.
And what sort of things are they looking for?
So funds in the bank, depending on the type of residency that you go for. Lucrative means that you're allowed to reside and work in Spain. Non-lucrative, you just are going to reside here. You don't have any rights to work here.
Like a retired person, for example.
A retired person or someone that, for example, doesn't need to work in Spain because they get their income from another country, whether it's the UK, US, wherever. So they don't necessarily need to work in Spain. For example, you've got a lot of yachties.
Yeah.
They don't earn an income from Spain because they're not employed in Spain by a Spanish company or self-employed in Spain. They get paid from abroad. So in that case, they could apply for non-lucrative because they have no interest in working in Spain.
Mm.
Okay. So that's what most people are going for at the minute. So you need to prove that you've got sufficient funds to not cost the system any money. You've got private medical insurance, CRB checks, customer criminal record background checks by the police. They normally tend to ask for one of them in the countries where you've lived the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's your passport. It's quite straightforward, but it just does feel quite overwhelming because it has to be done by the consulate, and that's where the appointments have to take place. That's actually a service that we've started helping with now, Vicky, because a lot of people are overwhelmed. They don't know what, you know, it kind of mentions on the information sheet very briefly what you should have, but then you don't know the amounts, it's not clear, and that's why we decided to help on those side of things. We will give all the advice, fill out the paperwork, make the appointments, but then we can't attend the appointment with them because it's only them that could can go to the appointment, but we're there to help through all the stages until they get the visa, and so then we continue here.
If you're, for example, if you're a family, a mum, dad, two kids, you have to apply for a visa for every single person,
or just the
adults?
No, every single person.
And how does it work with, I mean, for example, mum and dad are going to come over here and start working. Do they have to prove that they've already got work here, or are they going to, as the idea that they would come to set up a business here? I mean, like, is there different parts of the visa?
You've got entrepreneurs' visas if they want to do an investment in Spain, or if they want to set up a business in Spain, and you've got the golden visa for those who have investments in property or actually investments in Spain money-wise. That's another type of residency that we're helping with. It has no fiscal implications in Spain. So a lot of people that don't want to become resident for tax purposes, they're going for that type of residency.
The golden visa.
Golden visa. You've got to have a minimum of $500,000 in assets
in
Spain with no ties. So, for example, if you've got a property that you own here valued at $800,000,
Without
a mortgage, a minimum 500,000. So say you've got a mortgage on the 300,000 out of the 800, 500,000 is clean, then you're okay to apply for that.
Okay.
Okay.
It's very complicated, isn't it?
It is.
I feel again, my heart's beginning to pound.
Don't do that.
I know, but it makes me feel anxious. I'm so glad I'm already here.
And that's the whole idea of what we're trying to do, is reduce that anxiety, you know, to help and guide people through these stages and put their mind at rest, really. We're used to doing it, you know, we've got a lot of practice in it.
Yeah, hand holding is your speciality, isn't it?
We're good at that.
This whole new system for living and working in Spain is having a big effect on people that would normally come to work seasonally, isn't it? There are, this year in particular, already we have a lot of issues with the tourist industry, as we're not really certain how much that season's going to actually be allowed to operate. Plus also, for example, typical British-run businesses or British-focused businesses in tourist areas, they're not going to be able to get their usual amount of risk over, are they? Because these people can't get a visa anymore, can they?
I mean, to be honest, it's what you're saying. Not only has COVID affected us, you know, with tourism here on our little island, you know, because we depend on tourism, there's also that any of the workers that would come out as to, so say, you know, for the summer season, anybody wanted to work in Spain for the summer season can't do it on an NIE anymore.
Mm.
Before, with an NIE number, you were able to work, you'd get your NIE, you'd get your social security number, and you were able to be put on a contract for whatever the length of time.
Yeah.
But now, unless if they hold residency, they're not able to work here.
I guess there's going to be a big demand for Irish passport holders, totally. For example.
Totally. And that is what a lot of people are doing. You know, a lot of people, if they've got any type of links within their family tree to any type of other nationality, they're applying for those passports.
Mm.
Because that's the only way to do it. I mean, at the minute, if a local business here has to employ a British person to come and work here, not only do they need to submit and start all the paperwork here, they need, the company needs to prove solvency, the company needs to be able to prove that they can be on a 40-hour contract, full-time contract, minimum for 1 year, and then you need to put an offer of employment here, because there might be people in Spain that can be eligible for that job. So it does complicate matters.
Yeah, it really does.
A lot. And that's one thing that I wanted to say about that, though, now. You just made me think of something.
Mm-hmm.
Those British citizens that are actually working in Spain and still are on an NIE, they're the ones that need to apply for their residency now, before the end of June, to get their residency. And it's those companies that really...
They should be hustling.
Because until they get residency, then what will happen is, yes, okay, you're in the system, you've got a social security number, you've got an NIE, you were working here, but you need residency to stay here. If not, you're overstaying your welcome, and theoretically illegal here.
Yeah.
So it's those companies that need to push to make sure, and it's their responsibility, to get the staff members to get their residency in place in order to continue to work here.
And in their interests as well.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally, because it's going to come a time where social security will put a stop to that.
Mm.
Once they catch up on everything, yeah. But still.
Okay, well, that's a good warning.
Yeah, it's good.
You have been warned.
You have.
So, well, that brings me on to another question, which is it time for people like me,
yes,
a proper bona fide green card holding resident, to swap my card and get my TIE card?
Another good question. You're not obliged to exchange your card yet. Okay,
yeah.
But yet, at the minute, they're saying that you've got residency status. You don't have to exchange it for a TIE.
Okay.
It will come a time where they'll want that to happen. At the minute, things have gone down a lot compared to that mad rush last year we were talking about. I would advise you change it sooner rather than later, purely for you to have it. We were discussing before we started chatting about these topics, about the fact that, you know, some clients have gone through the airport.
Yes.
They've had, you know, police stopping them and saying, well, why don't you have your TIE? It's purely because I don't think everybody has it clear across the board.
No, not everyone's had the memo, darling.
Exactly.
But can I read you this thing?
Yeah, sure.
Because this is the typical experience of somebody, and there's been many of these.
Yep.
This is from my Facebook query I put out this morning. I asked, is there any question anybody would like me to ask about TIE cards? And Kate Miller said, yes. In regards to the resident discount, we have Permanente on our small green residencias, like I do, resident from 2010. The government says it's not obligatory to change over, and they are still valid and hold the same benefits. My daughter was stopped and charged full price, an extra €226, for a 2-day break to Menorca at check-in on the day of travel, when she's supposed to be getting her resident travel discount. She had the travel certificate from Ayuntamiento as well as her residency, but was told that the discount only applies now if you have a TIE card, despite there being no mention on the Balearia website. Yeah. That's just so unfair.
To be honest, we've got clients that have travelled with the permanent residency green card. They've had no problems.
Mm.
It is true that once you've got your TIE, okay, if it doesn't say permanent, you're not going to get the discount.
Yeah, because that's another problem people have been having.
Yeah, that they, not only are they issuing the names or dates of birth wrong, or that they're putting at the back that you're linked to an EU citizen, but they've also been getting the status wrong. You know, it's not just a first-time residency, it's permanent, and people that don't have permanente on the TIE card will be charged the fee, you know, for today's value of that flight, and the discount won't apply.
I remember when we picked up our cards, our address is Calle Francia in Sarajevo, and on Ollie's card, it said that he was French.
Ah, yeah, they made a mistake.
They really did, yeah. And it was like, oh, and if we hadn't checked it there and then, we collected it, he'd still be French.
Yeah, yeah, it's so important. I would actually say to Kate that she should contest that, really.
Yeah, I think she will.
And the ones that may be able to give her a certificate to prove that she is entitled to that travel discount is the town hall where she's registered. So I'd try there first. If not, I could look at an article on the BOE where it confirms that and send it to her.
That'd be great.
BOE is the official gazette, yeah, you know, where everything's published on there.
The BOE. another thing that people have let slide, at least some people that I know have let slide, is the issue of the driving licence. Now, Ollie and I both swapped over our British driving licences to our Spanish driving licence with, I believe, the help of my auxiliary.
Glad you did that in time. I'm glad you did that.
I'm really relieved that we did it in time, because now, having come past the 31st of March deadline, again, was it 31st of March or 31st of December, this one?
Well, there's various deadlines. It was the 30th of December in order to register your licence with the Spanish DGT, which is the equivalent of the DGLA here in Spain. And you're able to drive in Spain on a British driving licence up until the 30th of June 2021.
But if you haven't done that, what's the situation?
And this is, I don't think people know where we stand. They don't even know themselves, really. But anyone who has been a resident and has a British driving licence that didn't exchange their driving licence last year but did register the driving licence details with the DGT before the 30th of December 2020,
oh my goodness,
has until the end of June this year to make an appointment with Trafico, which is the DGT,
yeah,
and book an appointment to exchange their driving licence. So those that didn't know that they had to register their driving licence before the end of last year, that are residents, won't be able to exchange their driving licence anymore.
So that means they haven't currently...
They'd have to take...
And in limbo.
A new test in Spain.
It's
driving licence. No, we're lucky we can do it in English.
Oh, good.
So the test can be done in English. There's also two driving instructors that will help people to take the actual practical, you know, lightly driven test in English. You've got Charles McCartney and Claire. I can't remember Claire's surname, but there's both of them that do the driving licence from start to finish in English.
That's a huge relief for at least one friend of mine who completely forgot or didn't bother to swap it over and would definitely not be, would fail miserably if they had to do driving
Spanish. No, and you can do it in other languages as well, French, German. Yeah, because it's a test. The theory is actually a test exam, ABC.
Yeah.
The question and the three results and you tick it. They have got it in various languages.
But then the actual practical element, they have what to do that in Spanish?
Well, if you use Charles or Claire, they'll do it in English with you. And then the day of the exam, the Spanish Trafico examiner will be in the car. And if you use Charles or Claire, they will be in the car to translate for you as well.
Oh, phew. Okay? So there is a way around.
Yeah, there is. But at the minute, there's no agreement. What I'd advise clients to do is to actually go onto the DVLA.co.uk website and under driving abroad, go to the Spanish section. I'm going to give you a little screenshot of that so you can actually include into our recording of today, and there is no agreement, but if you can sign up for email alerts, so sign up and that's when you'll get updates as to if and when the UK make an agreement with Spain for exchange of driving licences. I hope there is. I mean, there's so many residents that didn't know they had to register their driving licence by the end of last year that having residency status, surely they should be able to exchange their driving licence.
There was a lot of disagreement, I think is the right word, controversy, about whether or not we had to, when Britain was a member of the EU, whether or not we had to swap. And I think in the end, Ollie and I just decided that it was just less hassle to swap because the a couple of times we were stopped by the police for checks or whatever, there was always the, where's your driving license? Oh, this is incorrect, here's a fine kind of situation. So again, it's the same thing with passing from through customs or whatever. It's like there's always somebody who doesn't know and thinks that one is, it's not clear, the communication levels are not clear about what is the actual bit of paper you're supposed to have in your hand.
I mean, what I will say is those, you know, Brits that are living here that have got maybe an EU passport, just so they know, if you're a resident in Spain, you have 2 years from the date of when you become a resident to exchange your driving license.
So straighten the horse's mouth.
And that's what happened, you know, for any UK citizens that were living here previous years. A lot of them didn't know that from the date that they got residency, they had 2 years to exchange their driving license. Yeah, after the 2 years, they had to exchange it because if they lost their driving license, they wouldn't be able to apply for it from the UK.
No. And it's actually not very painful, the whole... I remember having to do the eye test and the hearing test, and that was hilarious.
Yeah, it's like a coordination test, buzzing the lines as well. It's so sensitive, yes, isn't it?
It wasn't easy.
Yeah.
But the rest of it is pretty simple.
It is. It's straightforward. You know what it is? I think everybody just thinks of paperwork like a nightmare, and it just puts you off from starting, really.
Absolutely. Procrastination, though, I'm very comfortable in the mode of procrastination normally, so it's good to have it. I guess it's good to get it done, and then you've got it, you can just
keep it. As soon as we've got any news on that, anyway, we've got a Facebook page, which is Mallorca Solutions and Properties by Mallorca Solutions. Anybody that needs any updates on there, we will be putting them on there. So, you know, give us a little like and a follow to keep up.
And then we should maybe just do this like a 6 month catch up. Every 6 months, you give me a cup of tea.
Yes.
And we just do this again.
Yes.
Because things are continuously changing, aren't they?
You know what? You're going to get cream egg. I've got a box of cream eggs left over.
No.
From Easter. You can take that home. We'll give Ollie on the camera then another one as well.
Is there anything else you think that we should talk about? Is there anything else that, any other changes, anything else that's important that you want to mention now? Because I mean, how is the housing market here at the moment, for example?
To be honest, COVID hasn't helped. You know, we've got so many British citizens that are, you know, are touching base with us, that want to come out, that want to do viewings. But with COVID at the minute, the restrictions, as you know, and lockdown in the UK is limiting, you know, so things have been quiet. There is movement, not as much as we'd like. A lot of people that are buying are doing it via power of attorney. You know, give the power of attorney to lawyers. But at the minute, due to COVID, more than Brexit, it's why it's so much quieter. And we're hoping that once restrictions are lifted because of that, I mean, I think everything's come to a standstill with COVID. Everything's so much slower in the official departments here in Spain.
Yeah.
Everything in general. What I can say is we've been having a lot of inquiries on nationalities, a Spanish nationality.
Really?
A lot of British citizens that are living, you know, have been living here in Spain, want the option of applying for another passport. And if they've been resident in Spain for 10 years or more, or if they're married to a Spaniard, we only need a year to have been married with to a Spanish spouse and have a 1 year residency, they can apply for Spanish nationality.
And how does that work? So I imagine that the Spanish test. Is there not
you need to speak Spanish.
You need to speak pretty good Spanish, don't you? Not just be able to order a café con leche, but
there's three exams involved. So there is a knowledge test. The good thing about the knowledge test is that you have got material that you can study, and it's a test, A, B, and C. You just tick the options. Then you've got a written test, and then you've got an oral and comprehension. So as long as you are, I'd say, 75% fluent in Spanish, you definitely got good chances to pass it. They don't expect your Spanish to be perfect. They just want you to have a bit of knowledge, you know, geography, and just a bit of history about Spain.
Have you got a copy of it?
I have, yeah. It's there too.
Oh, I'd love to have a go.
Yeah.
See how I get on.
So that's been something that's been quite popular just lately.
And how long does the process take from application to, is it ages?
How long is it? Yes. It's meant to be 6 months. I've got applications that have been going on for 2 years.
Okay.
Okay. But still, if you're not in any rush, you're not losing anything, submit it. The children ones, for some reason, are coming through much quicker. They're going to school here. There's no tests involved anyway. We have had them through within 8 months.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, also a good one.
I think that that is definitely something that we are going to be looking at for our daughter.
Yeah,
because she...
Yeah, she did.
She feels more Spanish than English anyway.
Yeah, she's bilingual, isn't she? Anyway.
Trilingual, darling. Yeah, tried. Thank you.
And the other thing is that a lot of people are querying tax duty tax on imported goods. Anything that's imported into Spain has to have the duty tax on board. Added on top, as well as VAT, 21% VAT.
Yes, it suddenly became very expensive to receive a parcel.
It has, and also when people are bringing their vehicles in from the UK and re-registering them in Spain, you have to clear customs now, okay? But there is a little loophole that if they can prove that they're doing a change of residency, that they're coming from the UK to and transferring their residency to Spain, you can be exempt of the VAT, the duty tax, and the registration tax if you can prove that you've owned the vehicle for 6 months prior to coming into Spain and that you lived in the UK a minimum of 1 year.
Okay.
So there's ways of avoiding that, but just in general, we do have to pass customs, unfortunately.
Well, as always, Becky, font of all knowledge, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you
for just giving us so much information.
Pleasure, as always.
And I think that, well, hopefully the listener will get as much value out of this as I have, because I've got loads of notes now about what I've got to do.
You just call me after and I'll fill you in.
I've got you on speed dial anyway, girl. All right, thank you so much.
Thank you, Vicky. Thank you, Ollie.
See you in 6 months.
Yay! Take care.
There you go. I told you that would be invaluable. It's, so if you need to get hold of Becky, and you probably do, everybody does sooner or later, then look below. We'll link some details to Mallorca Solutions. And looks like we're going to have to get busy getting our kid another nationality.
I think it would be a good idea. She has the option. She can get a Spanish passport. So why not have it?
Well, somebody once told me you can't have too many passports. I've only got the one myself.
It sounds like James Bond.
Exactly. Just keep them in a safe deposit box in Switzerland. actually, there are quite a lot of people who've got in various different combinations of situations. So, I mean, our daughter was born here. She has a British passport because we're British, but she was born in Parma, has lived her whole life here. She would get one very easily.
She doesn't get one because she was born here. She gets one because she... Because
I wasn't saying she was, but I'm saying she effectively she is probably closer to being Spanish than she is to being British in terms of how she feels about stuff.
No, she gets one because of the length of time that she's been here and the fact that she could.
And she's been to school here.
Yeah, she could. I think when you're over 18, it becomes more problematic because you've got. I'm sorry, I'm getting really distracted now because I'm watching the people walking past this cafe and there's a guy walking past without any shoes on. Oh, I know him. Of course I know him. Without any shoes on, he's wearing a full-on, he's got his full-on hipster beard going on. It's like, wow. I can't stop looking. He's wearing a very interesting jumper. No shoes, and he looks completely out of place. He's in the wrong town, basically.
Jacket. What you really want is a pink tennis jumper tied over the shoulders.
You need to have like mustard trousers or be driving a Porsche to be in Port Andrew.
A pair of loafers with no socks.
We don't fit in either.
Not really, no.
Anyway, Gigi's passport, we could also get one ourselves, but we both have to go through a process which would involve exams.
Yeah.
In Spanish.
Anyway, the point I was trying to make is that there are quite a few people with kids here, whether they're born here or not born here, who actually could get Spanish passports quite easily, particularly before they're 18, and probably ought to, particularly regardless of what you think about Brexit. I think a Spanish passport does allow you more access to Europe than a British one does.
Yeah, especially if you're a kid and you're looking to study or you want to travel. I feel so sorry for the British young people now because they haven't got that luxury. luxury any longer.
No, it's not quite so easy, is it? So if you can get them a helping hand with a Spanish passport, I think we'll certainly do that with ours anyway.
Yeah.
So, and also, as they move towards studying, maybe she wants to study in the UK, maybe she wants to study in Spain, in which case it might be helpful to have both. Be a national of both countries.
Yeah, definitely.
So anyway, that's it for this time.
Have
that
you
was
promised?
episode 30.
Right. We'll try to be a bit more on it now that all of the things that we were doing have happened.
let's put some effort into trying to do a Super Yacht podcast next time, so we can find something for it to do.
Okay.
Anyway, meantime, I will finish up. One more coffee would kill us. So I
can't have any more coffee.
It's raining gently in Port Andratx.
It is softly, softly, but
slightly soggy but quite warm Port Andratx. Adios.
Yes. Mallorca, 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 let's call all three. Bloody good show and do a podcast about it.